Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. This week, we welcome Tom Uford, author of Adversity Builds Character. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you, Sherry. Glad to be here.
I'm really happy you're here. It's very exciting. You just had your first book tour.
Yes. It was a homecoming weekend in my hometown of Shreveport, Louisiana. Had two book signings and fundraisers, one raising money for their local AIDS Outreach Center, the Philadelphia Center, and one for the chapter of literacy volunteers at my alma mater, Centenary College, and both were quite successful. I was very pleased.
That's wonderful. I mean, it must be very exciting for your homecoming and everything.
It was. It was great to see old classmates, friends, family that I had not seen in a number of years, and especially two mentor English professors of mine from my college who were both there, and they're both world-renowned writers and experts themselves. So it was a real honor for me to autograph my first book and give to them.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. Tell us a bit about yourself and your background.
Well, I'm a 47-year-old triple quadriplegic. I have multiple sclerosis, an incomplete spinal fracture, and HIV. I am extremely healthy. My MS is in remission. My HIV is now non-detectable through medication and excellent care from my doctor of 12 years. And the side effects from my spinal fracture are controlled through medication. I've spent most of my life involved in community service and public affairs. I've worked on 11 political campaigns on both sides of the political aisle. I have been a congressional intern on Capitol Hill. Former mentors of mine in politics include the former governor of Louisiana, Charles Buddy Romer, who was a presidential candidate last year. The former assistant chief of staff to President George H.W. Bush, and the now retiring U.S. trade ambassador under the Obama administration, Ron Kirk, former mayor of Dallas. I was a Rotary International Scholar in Australia for a year studying East Asian political affairs. I have degrees in political science and history with a minor in English, I've spent most of my life trying to give back to my community. My adopted family and my Jesuit educators taught me the French phrase from the French Revolution, noblesse oblige. You have an obligation to give back to your community and to mankind for the blessings that God has bestowed on you, and that's one of the primary purposes behind my book.
That's very impressive.
Thank you.
What made you write the book?
Well, in 1992, I was diagnosed with MS in August. I had the car accident in September, which caused the incomplete spinal fracture, and then in October, I was diagnosed with HIV, all three in a three-month period.
Wow.
I stayed in the hospital for 5.5 months doing rehab inpatient, did 2.5 years outpatient, and then did 2 years of hippo horseback training as part of my therapy. And all throughout that, my godmother, grandmother, Joy Campbell, said, you know, your story really could help inspire others who have hard times that are coping with adversity. You've lived through so much, you've survived, and you've been blessed by God. There is a reason for you to still be here, and I think writing the book. She taught me when I was a little boy, adversity builds character, or as we used to say in the family, ABC. And she was referring to a family friend who had been brought down by illness of some kind. And Grandma made the quote. She said, well, inevitably, out of it will come adversity will build character. And for some reason, that memory stuck with me all through growing up. And when Grandma mentioned that again, she said, you need to write a book. I really think you could help other people. Your story is something that would inspire others who have hard times. And she said, look, we all have hard times. And they need to be inspired. If you can survive all of this and still keep going, then that gives them the strength and the perseverance to do the same.
Yeah, that's true. when you were you a big reader growing up, or how did you get your knack for writing? I mean, I know that how it came about, but usually people who write, there's like an ignition from the reading they did in their youth.
Well, and you're absolutely right about that. My adopted family, when they took me in, I was 10 years old. And I was a C and D student. Within 2 years of them taking me into their household, I graduated second in my class from grade school. I graduated from high school with high honors. A lot of that had to do with Chuck and Karen Campbell's insistence that, and I've coined this phrase, they taught me to yearn to learn rather than to yearn to earn. And they stressed the importance of reading. Now, I went to private schools all my life, and we always had summer reading lists. Well, Chuck and Karen's attitude was, as long as there's a book around to read, you have no excuse for doing nothing, for being lazy. So I also had reading lists at home. Chuck had never been a very good student in school, and he swore that if he ever had kids, his kids were not going to suffer the same fate. So they picked up classics like The Leatherstocking Tales by James Fenimore Cooper. I read The Red Baron. I read 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I read The Great Gatsby.
One of my favorites.
Oh, yeah, one of my favorites as well. I'm anxious to see how Leonardo DiCaprio portrays it. It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'll do as good a job as Robert Redford, but we'll see. But that, in turn, when I got to college, Centenary is the oldest liberal arts college west of the Mississippi and has a reputation for being very strenuous on its students in their academic affairs. By my sophomore year, I became editor-in-chief of the Centenary Conglomerate, which is the college newspaper. And doing that job, I had to do a lot of editing, rewriting, and writing articles, etc., and that's where my journalistic prose came in. Now, as far as writing a book, I must admit this was a major undertaking, and this book is written from my true life experience,
right.
And it was extremely cathartic for me. There were demons in my past that I had not dealt with that writing helped bring those to the forefront. And especially with my mom's death, chapter 9 is called Goodbye Mom. And she died a very tragic death in 85, shortly after Mother's Day. She was the victim of a mercy-killing suicide.
Wow.
And, yeah. And the chapter is very detailed, and it's probably my best effort at imagery writing. I'm not very good at creative imagery writing. I'm not fiction by any means. And that comes from years of working in politics where, you know, the power of the pen and choosing the right words are extremely important to convey your message. I keep a dictionary and a thesaurus at my right hand constantly because I'm looking always for the right words. But I have discovered that I do like to write and have 3 books planned in the future, so...
So you have 3 books planned in the future. Are they all memoirs, or are they other kinds of books?
Well, actually, the next one is a sequel to my first book. The first one, entitled Adversity Builds Character, I've already tentatively come up with a title for the second. The sequel is going to be Crossroads to Character. My journey through disability, addiction, and acceptance continues, ending in peace and prosperity.
Oh, wow.
The second book, in the first book, I specifically tell the readers that I avoided writing anything about my year-long experience in Australia because that would be in a book in itself. And so the third book is entitled ABC, Australia Beyond Canberra, a year-long travelogue into the hearts and minds of the land down under. And it's going to be an unusual undertaking in that I have already approached several of my former classmates at Australian National University. While I was in Australia, I gave 26 speaking engagements as part of my Rotary Fellowship.
Hello? Hello?
And sorry about that. There's a call coming in. And traveled approximately 8,000 kilometers while I was there. But during that time, I had the experiences of living on a sheep station, a cattle ranch, etc. Hold on, Sherry, I do have to transfer phones. Just 1 second. I apologize. Sorry about that interruption, but anyway.
That's all right. That's all right. You were telling us about the cattle ranch?
Oh, yeah. I stayed on a dairy farm, a cattle ranch, a sheep station. I had the experiences of seeing Australian sheep herding dogs in their forte of corralling sheep. I had the wonderful experience of, you know, being a city boy, never living on a farm or a country setting. I learned very quickly that you get out of the way of dairy cows when they're coming to feed because they will step on you and they won't move.
Oh, wow.
A Hereford milking cow stepped on my foot and refused to move. It was not a pleasant experience, but one I will never forget. I had the wonderful experience of learning how to body surf off the eastern coast near Brisbane on Stradbroke Island. I got to see the Adelaide Grand Prix in Adelaide. Plus, I was able, while I was in Canberra, the capital, studying, I was very fortunate to have some very humorous exploits meeting the Prime Minister at the time, Bob Hawke. We had a wonderful discussion about our President, George Bush, at the time. And it was very humorous. But the third book will be all about that. And the interesting part about it is that my former classmates, some of them have tentatively agreed. I haven't approached all of them. But I'm going to write the first half of the book, most of the book, and intermixed with that are going to be sections from my classmates with photos from their hometowns and excerpts about why their part of Australia makes for an ideal travel destination. It's going to be sort of like a travelogue.
Oh, sounds really fun. When you go through your time to write, how do you balance your personal time with your work time?
That's a tough one, and I'm sure I'm not alone with most writers in that respect. On my wall right now, I have a daily work schedule that I must admit is kind of new for me. Writing is something that I've had to develop my schedule and become steadfast at it. With two dogs and three cats and a home health aide that cleans my house for me, and the phone constantly ringing and a massive social media network, I'm constantly having to juggle all of that because I'm self-promoting my book and trying to get my message out of inspiration. So what I have done is I've set out a schedule where I delineate specific hours that I deal with certain things. And there are certain times of the day that I shut the phone off, I shut the computer off, and I write. I have to do that. And I have to operate from an outline. I can't just simply sit down at the computer and start writing. I have to start from an outline and go from there, and then it's a series of drafts and redrafts and rewrites.
Mm-hmm. And you did independent publishing. What made you go that route?
Well, I honestly was sort of linked into the burgeoning independent writer industry because as I was researching online, I discovered that traditional publishers are very hard to get yourself in the door. And once you get there, there's a long line ahead of you of established authors and writers way ahead of you that makes your prospects bleak at best. But with websites and platforms such as KDP, Amazon, Smashwords, etc., a writer can actually go into it and be their own publisher and really begin to get their writing out there. What then happens is it's all up to you to be your own publicist and your own advocate. And, you know, several interviewers have always asked me, what advice do you have for aspiring authors? And my first comment has always been, before you pop the cork on the champagne or light up your favorite cigar, just wait. The work has only just begun. If you think writing was the hard part, promoting it is the real tough battle ahead.
10 times harder.
Oh, yes.
I agree. I totally agree. I know why you did it. What is your biggest satisfaction in completing your book, and is that the impetus for you to continue with your sequel?
The greatest satisfaction is knowing that I'm able to try and get the word out of a number of things. One, my mom sacrificed a great deal that I have a better life. And my godmother, grandmother, her family took me in, and they took a troubled child and turned my life around. Now, both of them, the book is dedicated to them, so this past weekend for Mother's Day was very important in that respect. And they are the winds beneath my wings. They're both guardian angels to me, and I know that my book is in some way living up to the fulfillment of their dreams for me. And in that respect, the greatest satisfaction that I have gotten is when people read the book and they come back and they say, I am so inspired by all that you've lived through and you are still going. My theme song is a song by Corey Hart called Never Surrender. When my mom died her tragic death in 85, somehow a cassette tape of that song came into my possession, and I could be found walking aimlessly across campus listening to that song over and over and over again. And that is my life's theme song, Never Surrender. And that is the inspiration that I try to convey to others. Don't ever give up. You can fall back, you can take a break, and you can recharge, but you can't ever give up. The human spirit can overcome so many obstacles. You just have to have the will and the drive to keep fighting. But you also have to know that your life has purpose. There are people in this world whose lives would dramatically change if you were not there, and you need to remember that.
Yeah, it's very true. It's very true. I find that we all touch people we don't even know we touch.
Exactly.
That's true.
It's very funny. On Friday's TV interview, the interviewer, you know, I made the comment, I said, I am truly blessed. And Doug looked at me, and he's not the first person that has said this. He said, I am just awestruck by you saying that. Here you sit in a wheelchair. You cannot walk. You cannot fully use your hands. You have 3 disabilities, and yet you say your life is blessed. And he said, I am awestruck by that. It's inspiring to me that you have lived through so much, and yet you feel that your life is blessed, and I do. I have a roof over my head. I have clothes on my back. I have food in my stomach. I have friends and family who love me and care about me. And frankly, I've got pets who adore me. And those are the things that matter most in this world. I have a little money in the bank, not much. But you know what? There are a lot of people in this world, tens of thousands, if not millions, who don't have what I have. So I do have a blessed life, and I feel that I have an obligation to give back and try to make the world a better place.
Yep. Well, I think everybody does.
Everybody does, but unfortunately we get so caught up in the trappings of life and the hustle and bustle that we forget that. And we forget that all we have to do is take a look around. This is one of the 3 precepts of the book. All we have to do is take a look around, and you'll find someone who's got it worse off than yourself. So be grateful for what you have.
Well, you've given us a taste of the book. What would you like people to take away from it?
What I really want people to take away from is, yes, I've had some hard times, but everybody has hard times. You know, rich people have hard times. Poor people have hard times. Their mountains may look like molehills to me and vice versa. But what we all need to realize is that God never gives you more than you can really handle, and that you need to keep pressing forward and keep moving on, as Walt Disney used to say. And it's important, if we're to make the world a better place, if we are to live up to the nobility of what is written in Scripture, made in God's image, then we have an obligation to ourselves, our fellow man, and the world that we inhabit to do our best to be better people. And that means improving ourselves and giving back to our fellow man.
That's true. Do you have any kind of, like, inspiration in your life? People, books, movies? Is there something special that inspires you, or that you remember that kind of went, you just got like one of those aha moments?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there are several. I was asked in an interview a couple of weeks ago if there was one piece of literature that I wished I had written, and by which author, what would it have been? And I had to think very carefully about that, and it came to mind, To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. One of my favorite books and absolutely one of my favorite movies. And the reason I said that is because in that movie and in the book, Harper Lee brings out a period in American history where we were still struggling to find the full breadth of our democracy and our Constitution, in that we still had racism, we still had injustices in the world. And yet this one man, Atticus Finch, stood up and did what was unexpected, but he did it because it was the right thing to do. And I think there are times in this country when we've lost that, and I don't think that it's lost. I think that it's just been buried under decades and decades of greed and ambivalence to the world that we live in. My favorite movie of all time is without a doubt, The Field of Dreams.
Oh, I love that movie.
There is a soliloquy by James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
When he's describing baseball, and that it's been rewritten and erased by over blackboards of American history. And that soliloquy to me hit me very, it pulled my heartstrings because I'm a big baseball fan. I love the Cubs and I love the Rangers. And the idea of this American pastime that has been steamrolled over for decades, but it's still there. It's still part of the American psyche. And it's everything that we hope to be and that we want to believe in ourselves. And, you know, it's those kinds of breakthrough moments of movies that you see. Another one for me was Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. When I worked on Capitol Hill, I had that vigor and that drive. I went to the U.S. Senate chamber expecting to see the great political debates of our day and time, like in that movie by Frank Capra.
Mm-hmm.
And there I was sitting in the gallery, and I was absolutely stunned. There was one senator standing in front of a scribe, and there was the Senate chamber staff, and there was no one else in there. And I was absolutely stunned. I suddenly got the reality of what American politics has become. And most senators and congressmen spend their time in committee rather than doing these great debates that you see in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. at times in American history, those things do happen. But I'm still a firm, I'm a patriot at heart. I'm a firm believer in all the precepts of the American Constitution and our Founding Fathers, and politics is very important to me. I was once giving a series of lectures and seminars at a high school when I was in college, and a young sophomore raised his hand. The theme of the series was how politics affects you. And this young sophomore raised his hand, and he said, "I just don't get it. I don't see how politics affects me." Well, Shreveport is right next door to Bossier City, and Bossier City is the headquarters for the 8th Bomber Wing of the U.S. Air Force. And I looked at him and I said, I pointed out the window and I said, "My friend, look out that window. Within 2.5 miles of here is the world's largest B-52 Air Force base world. If nuclear war was declared this very second, you would have less than 15 minutes to fall on your knees, say your prayers, and kiss your tail goodbye." I said, "So that's how politics affects you." He came up to me afterwards and he said, "You know, I hear this kind of stuff from teachers and my parents and on the news, but it never quite meant the same until I heard it from someone my own age." And that really struck me. And so in writing this book and in trying to get on a speaking tour and doing these interviews, my whole goal is to inspire people that they can't just sit by apathetically and accept things. If you want to make a change, then you have to get out there and change it. Martin Luther King said that it's the silence of the multitudes that is equally as damaging as the evil of the ones that are causing horror. And, of course, I've paraphrased it. But, I mean, the point is that we all have a responsibility and an obligation to our fellow man and the human society as a whole. And if we don't, then we're only guilty of what happens. I mean, we're as responsible as anybody else.
Yep, my dad used to say that. And sadly, our interview is over. I want to thank you so much. It was a really interesting interview. I really appreciate it.
Sherry, thank you very much for having me, and I look forward to future interactions with you and encourage people to get the book and be inspired by it. Thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. I really enjoyed it. Next week, we're going to have Harriet Schultz. She's going to talk about her legacy novels, Legacy of the Highlands and Legacy of Revenge. I'd like my live audience to thank Tom for a really wonderful interview, and I want to thank you, too. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Sherry.
And thank you for chatting with Sherry.